or any sweat. A sound attitude at any time. Not an attitude. The functioning of discipline. Jubal, I grok you were tired. Would you become untired? Or would you rather go to bed? If you don't, our brothers will keep you up all night talking. We don't sleep much, you know. Jubal yawned. I choose a long, hot soak and 8 hours sleep. I'll visit with our brothers tomorrow. And other days. And many other days, agreed Sam. Jubal found his room, was immediately joined by Patty, who drew his tub, turned back his bed without touching it, placed his setup for drinks by his bed, mixed one and placed it on the shelf of the tub. Jubal did not hurry her out. She had arrived, displaying all her pictures. He knew enough about the syndrome, which can lead to full tattooing, to be sure that if he did not ask to examine them, she would be hurt. Nor did he feel the fret that Ben had felt on a similar occasion. He undressed, and discovered with wry pride that it did not matter, even though it had been years since the last time he had allowed anyone to see him naked. It seemed to matter not at all to Patty. She simply made sure that the tub was just right before letting him step into it. Then she remained, and told him what each picture was, and in what sequence to view them. Jubal was properly awed and appropriately complimentary, while completely the impersonal art critic. It was, he admitted to himself, the goddamnedest virtuosity with a needle he had ever seen. It made his Japanese friend look like a cheap carpet as compared with the finest Princess Bokhara. "They've been changing a little," she told him. "Take the holy breath scene here. That rear wall is beginning to look curved, and the bed almost looks like a hospital table. I'm sure George doesn't mind. There hadn't been a needle touched to me since he went to heaven. And if miraculous changes take place, I'm sure he has a finger in it." Jubal decided that Patty was dotty, but nice. He preferred people who were a little dotty. The salt of the earth bored him. Not too dotty, he amended. Patty had whisked his discarded clothes into his wardrobe without coming near them. She was probably a clear proof that one didn't have to be sane, whatever that was, to benefit by this discipline. The boy apparently could teach anyone. He sensed when she was ready to leave, and suggested it by asking her to kiss his goddaughters good night. He had forgotten.
"I was tired, Patty."
She nodded. "And I'm called for dictionary work." She leaned over and kissed him, warmly but quickly. "I'll take that one to our babies."
"And a pat for Honeybun."
"Yes, of course. She groks you, Jubal. She knows you like snakes."
"Good. Share water, brother."
"Thou art God, Jubal." Jubal settled back in the tub, was surprised to find that he was not tired, and his bones no longer ached. Patty was a tonic, happiness on the hoof. He wished that he had no doubts, then admitted that he didn't want to be anything but himself, old and cranky and self-indulgent. Finally, he soaped and showered, and decided to shave so that he wouldn't have to before breakfast. Presently, he bolted the door, turned out the overhead light, and got into bed. He looked around for something to read, found nothing to his annoyance, being addicted to this vice above all else. He sipped part of a drink instead and turned out the bedlight. His chat with Patty seemed to have wakened and rested him. He was still awake when Dawn came in. He called out,
"Who's there?"
"It's Dawn, Jubal."
"It can't be Dawn yet, it was only..." "Oh."
"Yes, Jubal. Me."
"Damn it, I thought I bolted that door. Child marched straight out of..." "Hey! Get out of this bed, get!"
"Yes, Jubal. But I want to tell you something first."
"Huh?"
"I have loved you a long time. Almost as long as Jill has."
"Why, the very..." "Quit talking nonsense and shake your little fanny out the door."
"I will, Jubal," she said humbly. "But please listen to something first. Something about women."
"Not now, tell me in the morning."
"Now, Jubal." He sighed.
"Talk. Stay where you are."
"Jubal, my beloved brother, men care very much how we women look, so we try to be beautiful, and that is a goodness. I used to be a peeler, as you know. It was a goodness to let men enjoy the beauty I was for them. It was a goodness for me, to know that they needed what I had to give. But, Jubal, women are not men. We care what a man is. It can be something as silly as, is he wealthy? Or it can be, will he take care of my children and be good to them? Or sometimes it can be, is he good? As you are good, Jubal. But the beauty we see in you is not the beauty you see in us. You are beautiful, Jubal.
for God's sake.
I think you speak rightly. Thou art God, and I am God. And I need you. I offer you water. Will you let me share and grow closer?
Look, little girl, if I understand what you're offering...
You grok, Jubal. To share all that we have. Ourselves. Selves.
I thought so. My dear, you have plenty to share, but myself, where you arrived years too late. I am sincerely regretful, believe me. Thank you, deeply. Now go away and let an old man sleep.
You will sleep when waiting is filled. Jubal, I could lend you strength, but I grok clearly that it is not necessary.
God damn it, it wasn't necessary. No, Dawn. Thank you, dear.
She got to her knees and bent over him. Just one more word, then. Jill told me that if you argued, I was to cry. Shall I get tears all over your chest and share water with you that way?
I'm going to spank, Jill.
Yes, Jubal. I'm starting to cry.
She made no sound, but in a second or two a warm, full tear splashed on his chest, was followed by another, and another, and still more. She sobbed almost silently.
Jubal cursed and reached for her, and cooperated with the inevitable.
Jubal heaved a sigh. Chapter 36.
Jubal woke up, alert, rested, and happy, realized that he felt better before breakfast than he had in years. For a long, long time he had been getting through that black period between waking and the first cup of coffee, by telling himself that tomorrow might be a little easier. This morning he found himself whistling. He noticed it, stopped himself, forgot it, and started up again. He saw himself in the mirror, smiled wryly, then grinned.
"You incorrigible old goat. They'll be sending the wagon for you any minute now."
He noticed a white hair on his chest, plucked it out, didn't bother with many others just as white, went on making himself ready to face the world. When he went outside his door, Jill was there. Accidentally? He no longer trusted any coincidence in this ménage. It was as organized as a computer. She came straight into his arms.
"Jubal, oh, we love you so. Thou art God."
He returned her kiss as warmly as it was given, grokking that it would be hypocritical not to, and discovered that kissing Jill differed from kissing Dawn, only in some fashion unmistakable but beyond definition. Presently he held her away from him.
"You baby Messalina, you framed me."
"Jubal, darling, you were wonderful."
How the hell did you know I was able?"
She gave back a gaze of clear-eyed innocence.
"Why, Jubal, I've been certain ever since Mike was asleep. In trance. He could see around him quite a distance, and sometimes he would look in on you, a question to ask or something, to see if you were asleep."
"But I slept alone. Always."
"Yes, dear, that wasn't what I meant. I always had to explain things that he didn't understand."
"Phew."
He decided not to pursue it.
"Just the same. You shouldn't have framed me."
"I grok you don't mean that in your heart, Jubal. We had to have you in the nest all the way in. We need you. Since you were shy and humble in your goodness, we did what was needful to welcome you without hurting you. And we did not hurt you, as you grok."
"What is this we stuff?"
"It was a full sharing water of all the nest. As you grok, you were there. Mike woke up for it, and grokked with you, and kept us all together." Jubal hastily abandoned this inquiry, too.
"So Mike is awake at last? That's why your eyes are shining?"
"Only partly. We are always delighted when Mike isn't withdrawn. It's jolly. But he's never really away. Jubal, I grok that you have not grok the fullness of our way of sharing water. But waiting will fill. Nor did Mike grok it at first. He thought it was only for quickening of eggs, as it is on Mars."
"Well, that's the primary purpose, babies, which makes it silly behavior on the part of a person, namely me, who has no wish at my age to cause such increase."
She shook her head. "Babies are one result, but not the primary purpose. Babies give meaning to the future, and that is a great goodness. But only 3 or 4 or 12 times in a woman's life is a baby quickened in her. Out of thousands of times, she can share herself. And that is the primary use for what we can do so often, but would need to do so seldom if it were only for reproduction.
It is sharing and growing closer forever and always, Jubal. Mike grokked this because on Mars the two things, quickening eggs and sharing closer, are entirely separate. And he grokked, too, that our way is best. What a happy thing it is not to have been hatched a Martian, to be human. And a woman. He looked at her closely.
Child, are you pregnant?
Yes, Jubal. I grokked that waiting had ended and I was free to be. Most of the nest have not needed to wait, but Dawn and I have been busy. But when we grokked this cusp coming, I grokked there would be waiting after cusp, and you can see that there will be. Mike will not rebuild the temple overnight, so this high priestess will be unhurried in building a baby. Waiting always fills. From this high-flown mishmash, Jubal abstracted the central fact, or Jill's belief concerning such a possibility. Well, no doubt she had had plenty of opportunity. He resolved to keep an eye on the matter and bring her home for it. Mike's Superman methods were all very well, but it wouldn't hurt to have modern equipment at hand, too. Using Jill to eclampsia or some other mishap, he would not let happen, even if he had to get tough with the kids. He wondered about another such possibility, decided not to mention it.
Where's Dawn? And where's Mike? The place seems awfully quiet.
No one else was in sight, and he heard no voices. And yet that odd feeling of happy expectancy was even stronger. He would have expected a release from tension after the ceremony he had apparently joined in himself, unbeknownst, but the air was more charged than ever. It suddenly reminded him of how he had felt as a very small boy when waiting for his first circus parade, and someone had called out, "There come the elephants!" Jubal felt as if, were he just a little taller, he could see the elephants past the excited crowd. But there was no crowd. "Dawn told me to give you a kiss for her. She'll be busy for the next 3 hours, about. And Mike is busy, too. He went back into withdrawal."
"Oh."
"Don't sound so disappointed. He'll be free soon. He's making a special effort so that he will be free on your account, and to let us all be free. Duke spent all night scouring the city for the high-speed recorders we use for the dictionary, and now we've got everybody who can possibly do it being jammed full of Martian phonic symbols. And then Mike will be through and can visit. Dawn has just started dictating. I finished one session, ducked out to say good morning, and am about to go back and get poured full of my last part of the chore. So I'll be gone a little longer than Dawn will be. And here's Dawn's kiss. The first one was just from me." She put her arms around his neck and put her mouth greedily to his, at last said, "My goodness, why did we wait so long? Bye for a little." Jubal found a few in the dining room. Duke looked up, smiled and waved, went back to hearty eating. He did not look as if he had been up all night, nor had he. He had been up two nights. Becky Veazey looked around when Duke waved and said happily, "Hi, you old goat," grabbed his ear, pulled him down and whispered, "I've known it all along. But why weren't you around to console me when the professor died?" She added aloud, "Sit down and we'll get some food into you while you tell me what devilment you've been plotting lately."
"Just a moment, Becky."
Jubal went around the table.
"Hi, Skipper. Good trip?"
"No trouble. It's become a milk run. I don't believe you've met Mrs. Van Tromp, my dear, the founder of this feat, the one and only Jubal Harshaw. Two of him would be too many."
The captain's wife was a tall, plain woman with the calm eyes of one who has watched from the widow's walk. She stood up, kissed Jubal.
"Thou art God."
"Thou art God."
He might as well relax to the ritual. Hell, if he said it often enough, he might lose the rest of his buttons and believe it. And it did have a friendly ring with the arms of the skipper's frau firmly around him. He decided that she could teach even Jill something about kissing. How was it Anne described it? She gave it her whole attention. She wasn't going anywhere.
"I suppose, Van," he said, "that I shouldn't be surprised to find you here."
"Well," answered the spaceman, "a man who commutes to Mars ought to be able to palaver with the natives, don't you think?"
"Just for powwow, huh?"
"There are other aspects." Van Tromp reached for a piece of toast. The toast cooperated. "Good food? Good company?"
Yes.
"Jubal," Madame Vasant called out. "Soup's on." Jubal returned to his place, found eggs on horseback, orange juice, and other choice items. Becky patted his thigh. "A fine prayer meeting, me bucko."
"Woman, back to your horoscopes."
"Which reminds me, dearie, I want to know the exact instant of your birth."
I was born on three successive days. They had to handle me in sections."
Becky made a rude answer. I'll find out.
The courthouse burned down when I was 3. You can't.
There are ways. Want to bet?
You keep heckling me and you'll find you're not too big to spank. Have you been, girl?
What do you think? How do I look?
Healthy. A bit spread in the butt. You've touched up your hair.
I have not. I quit using henna months ago. Get with it, pal, and we'll get rid of that white fringe you've got. Replace it with a lawn.
Becky, I refuse to grow younger. I came by my decrepitude the hard way, and I propose to enjoy it. Quit prattling and let a man eat.
Yes, sir, you old goat.
Jubal was just leaving, as the man from Mars came in.
Father. Oh, Jubal.
Mike hugged and kissed him.
Jubal gently unwound him.
Be your age, son. Sit down and enjoy your breakfast. I'll sit with you.
I didn't come here for breakfast. I came looking for you.
We'll find a place and talk.
All right.
They went to an unoccupied living room, Mike pulling Jubal by the hand like an excited small boy welcoming his favorite grandparent. Mike picked a big chair for Jubal and sprawled on a couch near him. They were on the side of the wing having the private landing flat, high French windows open to it. Jubal got up to shift his chair so that he would not be facing the light. He was mildly annoyed to find that the chair shifted itself. Remote control over objects was a labor saver, and probably a money saver, certainly on laundry. His spaghetti-splashed shirt had been so fresh that he had put it on again, and obviously to be preferred to the blind balkiness of mechanical gadgets. Nevertheless, Jubal was not used to telecontrol done without wires or waves. It startled him the way horseless carriages had disturbed decent, respectable horses about the time Jubal was born. Duke came in and served brandy. Mike said,
"Thanks, Cannibal. Are you the new butler?"
"Somebody has to do it, monster. You've got every brain in the place slaving away over a hot microphone."
"Well, they'll be through in a couple of hours, and you can revert to your usual lecherous sloth."
"The job is done, Cannibal. Pow. 30. Ended."
"The whole damn Martian language in one lump? Monster, I'd better check you for burned-out capacitors."
"Oh, no.
Only the primer knowledge that I have. Had, I mean. My brain's an empty sack. Eyebrows like Stinky will be going to Mars for a century to fill in what I never learned. But I did turn out a job. 6 weeks of subjective time since 5 this morning, or whenever it was we adjourned the sharing. And now the stalwart steady types can finish it while I loaf."
Mike stretched and yawned.
"Feels good. Finishing a job always feels good."
"You'll be slaving away at something else before the day is out. Boss, this Martian monster can't take it or leave it alone. This is the first time he's relaxed in over 2 months. He ought to sign up with Workers Anonymous. Or you ought to visit us more often. You're a good influence."
"God forbid that I should ever be."
"Get out of here, Cannibal, and quit telling lies."
"Lies, hell. You turn me into a compulsive truth-teller. And it's a handicap in the joints where I hang out."
Duke left. Mike lifted his glass.
"Share water, Father. Drink deep, son. Thou art God." "Mike, I'll put up with that from the others. But don't you come godding at me. I knew you when you were only an egg."
"Okay, Jubal.
That's better. When did you start drinking in the morning? Do that at your age and you'll ruin your stomach. You'll never live to be a happy old soak like me."
Mike looked at his glass.
"I drink when it's a sharing. It doesn't have any effect on me, nor on most of us, unless we want it to. Once I let it have its effect until I passed out, it's an odd sensation. Not a goodness, I grok. Just a way to discorporate for a while without discorporating. I can get a similar effect, only much better and with no damage to repair afterwards, by withdrawing."
"Economical."
"Uh-huh. Our liquor bill isn't anything. Matter of fact, running that whole temple hasn't cost what it costs you to keep up our home. Except for initial investment and replacing some props. Coffee and cakes was all. We made our own fund. We needed so little that I used to wonder what to do with the money that came in."
"Then why did you take collections?"
"Huh? Oh, you have to charge them, Jubal. The marks won't pay attention if it's free."
"I knew that. I wondered if you did."
"Oh, yes, I grok marks, Jubal. At first I did preach free. Didn't work. We humans have to make considerable progress before we can accept a free gift and value it. I never let them have anything free until 6th circle. By then they can accept. And accepting is much harder than giving."
"Hmm. Son, maybe you should write a book on human psychology."
"I have, but it's in Martian. Stinky has the tapes."
Mike took a slow, sybaritic sip. "We do use some liquor. A few of us, Saul, myself, Sven, some others, like it.
I've learned to let it have just a little effect, then hold it and gain a euphoric growing closer, much like trance, without having to withdraw. He sipped again. That's what I'm doing this morning, letting myself get the mildest glow and be happy with you. Jubal studied him closely.
Son, you've got something on your mind.
Yes.
Do you want to talk it out?
Yes. Father, it's always a great goodness to be with you, even if nothing is troubling me, but you are the only human I can talk to and know that you will grok and not be overwhelmed. Jill always groks. But if it hurts me, it hurts her still more. Dawn the same. Patty. Well, Patty can always take my hurt away, but she does it by keeping it herself. They are too easily hurt for me to share in full with them anything I can't grok and cherish before I share it. Mike looked very thoughtful. Confession is needful. Catholics know that. They have a core of strong men to take it. Fosterites have group confession and pass it around and thin it out. I need to introduce confession in the early purging. Oh, we have it, but spontaneously after the pilgrim no longer needs it. We need strong men for that. Sin is rarely concerned with a real wrongness, but sin is what the sinner groks as sin, and when you grok with him, it can hurt.
I know.
Mike went on earnestly. Goodness is not enough. Goodness is never enough. That was one of my first mistakes, because among Martians, goodness and wisdom are identical, but not with us. Take Jill. Her goodness was perfect when I met her. Nevertheless, she was all mixed up inside, and I almost destroyed her, and myself too, for I was just as mixed up before we got squared away. Her endless patience, not common on this planet, was all that saved us, while I was learning to be human, and she was learning what I knew. But goodness alone is never enough. A hard, cold wisdom is required for goodness to accomplish good. Goodness without wisdom always accomplishes evil. Mike added most soberly, "And that's why I need you, Father, as well as loving you. I need your wisdom and your strength, for I must confess to you."
Jubal squirmed. "Oh, for Pete's sake, Mike, don't make a production out of it. Just tell me what's eating you. We'll find a way out."
"Yes, Father." But Mike did not go on. Finally, Jubal said,
"Do you feel busted up by the destruction of your temple? I wouldn't blame you. But you aren't broke. You can build again." "Oh, no, that doesn't matter at all. Eh?"
That temple was a diary with its pages filled. Time for a new one rather than write over filled pages. Fire can't destroy the experiences. And from a standpoint of practical politics, being chased out in so spectacular a fashion will help in the long run. Churches thrive on martyrdom and persecution. It's their best advertising. In fact, Jubal, the last couple of days have been an enjoyable break in a busy routine. No harm done. His expression changed.
"Father,
lately I learned that I was a spy."
"What do you mean, son?"
"For the old ones. They sent me here to spy on our people." Jubal thought about it. Finally, he said,
"Mike, I know you are brilliant. You possess powers that I don't have and have never seen before. But a man can be a genius and still have delusions."
"I know. Let me explain, and you decide whether or not I'm crazy. You know how the surveillance satellites used by the security forces operate?"
"No."
"I don't mean details that would interest Duke. I mean the general scheme. They orbit around the globe, picking up data and storing it. At a particular point, the sky eye is keyed, and it pours out all that it has seen. That is what they did with me. You know that we of the Nest use what is called telepathy?"
"I've been forced to believe it."
"We do. But this conversation is private. And besides, no one would attempt to read you. I'm not sure we could. Even last night, the link was through Dawn's mind, not yours."
"Well, that is some comfort."
"I am only an egg in this art. The old ones are masters. They linked with me, but left me on my own, ignored me, then triggered me, and all I had seen and heard and done and felt and grokked poured out and into their records. I don't mean that they wiped my mind of it. They simply played the tape, so to speak, made a copy. But the triggering I could feel, and it was over before I could stop it. Then they cut off the linkage. I couldn't even protest."
"Well,
It seems to me that they used you shabbily.
Not by their standards. Nor would I have objected. I would have been happy to volunteer, had I known it before I left Mars, but they didn't want me to know. They wanted me to grok without interference.
I was going to add, Jubal said, that if you are free of this damnable invasion of your privacy now, then what harm has been done? It seems to me that you could have had a Martian at your elbow all these past 2.5 years, with no harm other than attracting stares.
Mike looked very sober. Jubal listened to his story. Listen all the way through. Mike told him of the destruction of the missing fifth planet of Sol, whose ruins are asteroids.
Well, Jubal? It reminds me of the myths about the Flood.
No, Jubal. The Flood you aren't sure about. Are you sure about the destruction of Pompeii and Herculaneum?
Oh, yes. Those are established facts.
Jubal, the destruction of the fifth planet by the Old Ones is as certain as that eruption of Vesuvius, and is recorded in much greater detail. No myth. Fact.
Stipulated. Do I understand that you fear that the Old Ones of Mars will give this planet the same treatment? Will you forgive me if I say that is hard for me to swallow?
Well, Jubal, it wouldn't take the Old Ones to do it. It merely takes knowledge of physics, how matter is put together, and the same control you have seen me use time and again, simply necessary first to grok what you want to manipulate. I can do it right now. Say a piece near the core of Earth, about 100 miles in diameter, much bigger than necessary, but we want to make this fast and painless, if only to please Jill. Feel out its size and place. Grok carefully how it is put together.
His face lost all expression, and his eyeballs started to turn up.
Hey, broke in Harshaw. Stop it. I don't know whether you can or not, but I don't want you to try.
The face of the man from Mars became normal.
Why, I would never do it. For me, it would be a wrongness. I am human. But not for them?
Oh, no. The Old Ones might grok at his beauty. I don't know. Oh, I have the discipline to do it, but not the volition. Jill could do it. That is, she could contemplate the exact method, but she could never will to do it. She is human, too. This is her planet. The essence of the discipline is, first, self-awareness, and then self-control. By the time a human is able to destroy this planet by this method, instead of by clumsy things like cobalt bombs, it is not possible, I grok fully, for him to entertain the volition. He would discorporate, and that would end any threat. Our Old Ones don't hang around the way they do on Mars.
Hmm. Son, as long as we are checking you for bats in your belfry, clear up something else. You've always spoken of these Old Ones, as casually as I speak of the neighbor's dog, but I find ghosts hard to swallow. What does an Old One look like?
Why, just like any other Martian.
Then how do you know it's not just an adult Martian? Does he walk through walls or such?
Any Martian can do that.
I did yesterday. Shimmers? Or anything?
No. You see, hear, feel them. Everything. It's like an image in a stereo tank, only perfect, and put right into your mind. But, look, Jubal, the whole thing would be a silly question on Mars, but I realize it isn't here. If you were present at the discorporation, death of a friend, then helped eat his body, and then you saw his ghost, talked with it, touched it, anything. Would you then believe in ghosts?
Well, either that or I'd slip my leash.
All right, here it could be hallucination. If I grok correctly that we don't hang around when we discorporate, but in the case of Mars, there is either an entire planet all run by mass hallucination, or the straightforward explanation is correct, the one I was taught, and all my experience led me to believe. Because on Mars, ghosts are the most powerful and most numerous part of the population. The ones still alive, the corporate ones, are hewers of wood and drawers of water, servants to the Old Ones.
Jubal nodded.
Okay. I'll never boggle at slicing with Occam's razor. While it runs contrary to my experience, mine is limited to this planet, provincial. All right, son. You're scared they might destroy us?
Mike shook his head. Not especially. I think, this is not a grokking, but a guess, that they might do one of two things. Either destroy us, or attempt to conquer us culturally. Make us over into their own image.
But you're not fretted about us being blown up? That's a pretty detached viewpoint.
No. Oh, they might decide to. You see, by their standards, we are diseased and crippled. The things we do to each other, the way we fail to understand each other, our almost complete failure to grok with one another, our wars and diseases and famines and cruelties, these will be insanity to them. I know. So I think they will decide on a mercy killing. But that's a guess. I'm not an old one. But Jubal, if they decide to, it will be... Mike thought a long time. A minimum of 500 years? More likely 5,000 before anything would be done.
That's a long time for a jury to be out.
Jubal, the greatest difference between the two races is that Martians never hurry, and humans always do. They would much rather think about it an extra century or half dozen to be sure that they grok all the fullness.
In that case, son, don't worry about it. If in another 500 or 1,000 years the human race can't handle its neighbors, you and I can't help it. However, I suspect that they will be able to.
So I grok, but not in fullness. I said I wasn't worried about that. The other possibility troubled me more, that they might move in and try to make us over.
Jubal, they can't. An attempt to make us behave like Martians would kill us, as certainly, but not painlessly. It would be a great wrongness.
Jubal took time to answer.
But, son, isn't that what you have been trying to do?
Mike looked unhappy.
It was what I started out to do. It is not what I'm trying to do now. Father, I know that you were disappointed in me when I started this.
Your business, son.
Yes, self. I must grok each cusp myself alone. And so must you. And so must each self. Thou art God.
I don't accept the nomination.
You can't refuse it. Thou art God, and I am God, and all that groks is God. And I am all that I have ever been or seen or felt or experienced. I am all that I grok.
Father, I saw the horrible shape this planet is in, and I grokked, though not in fullness, that I could change it. What I had to teach couldn't be taught in schools. I was forced to smuggle it in as a religion, which it is not, and con the Marks into tasting it by appealing to their curiosity. In part, it worked as I knew it would. The discipline was just as available to others as it was to me, who was raised in a Martian nest. Our brothers get along together. You've seen, you've shared. Live in peace and happiness, with no bitterness, no jealousy. That alone was a triumph. Male-femaleness is the greatest gift we have. Romantic physical love may be unique to this planet. If it is, the universe is a poorer place than it could be. And I grok dimly that we who are God will save this precious invention and spread it. The joining of bodies with merging of souls in shared ecstasy, giving, receiving, delighting in each other. Well, there's nothing on Mars to touch it. And it's the source, I grok, in fullness, of all that makes this planet so rich and wonderful. And Jubal, until a person, man or woman, has enjoyed this treasure bathed in the mutual bliss of minds linked as closely as bodies. That person is still as virginal and alone as if he had never copulated. But I grok that you have. Your very reluctance to risk a lesser thing proves it. And anyhow, I know it directly. You grok. You always have. Without needing the language of groking. Dawn told us that you were as deep into her mind as you were into her body.
The lady exaggerates.
It is impossible for Dawn to speak other than rightly about this. And, forgive me, we were there, in her mind, but not in yours. And you were there with us, sharing. Jubal refrained from saying that the only times he had ever felt that he could read minds was precisely in that situation, and then not thoughts, but emotions. He simply regretted without bitterness that he was not half a century younger, in which case Dawn would have had that miss taken off her name, and he would have boldly risked another marriage, despite his scars. Also, that he would not trade the preceding night for all the years that might be left him. In essence, Mike was right.
Go on, sir.
That's what sexual union should be. But that's what I slowly grokked it rarely was. Instead, it was indifference and acts mechanically performed, and rape and seduction as a game no better than roulette but less honest, and prostitution and celibacy by choice and by no choice, and fear and guilt and hatred and violence, and children brought up to think that sex was bad and shameful and animal and something to be hidden and always distrusted, this lovely, perfect thing, male-femaleness, turned upside down and inside out and made horrible. And every one of those wrong things is a corollary of jealousy. Jubal, I couldn't believe it. I still don't grok jealousy in fullness. It seems insanity to me. When I first learned what this ecstasy was, my first thought was that I wanted to share it. Share it at once with all my water brothers, directly with those female, indirectly by inviting more sharing with those male. The notion of trying to keep this never-failing fountain to myself would have horrified me had I thought of it. But I was incapable of thinking it. And in perfect corollary, I had no slightest wish to attempt this miracle with anyone I did not already cherish and trust. Jubal, I am made physically unable even to attempt love with a female who has not shared water with me. And this runs all through the nest. Psychic impotence. Unless spirits blend as flesh blends. Jubal was thinking mournfully that it was a fine system for angels. When a sky car landed on the private flat diagonally in front of him, he turned his head to see, and as its skids touched, it vanished. Trouble? He asked. No, Mike denied. They are beginning to suspect that we are here, that I am, rather. They think the rest are dead. The innermost temple, I mean. The other circles aren't being bothered. He grinned. We could get a good price for these rooms. The city is filling up with Bishop Short's shock troops. Isn't it about time to get the family elsewhere? Jubal, don't worry. That car never had a chance to report, even by radio. I'm guarding us. It's no trouble now that Jill is over her misconceptions about wrongness and discorporating persons who have wrongness in them. I used to have to use complicated expedients to protect us, but now Jill knows that I do it only as fullness is grokked. The man from Mars grinned boyishly. Last night she helped me with a hatchet job, nor was it her first time.
What sort of a job?
Oh, just to follow up on the jailbreak. Some few I couldn't release. They were vicious. So I got rid of them before I got rid of bars and doors. But I've been slowly grokking this whole city for months, and quite a few of the worst were not in jail. I have been waiting, making a list, making sure of fullness in each case. So now that we are leaving this city, they don't live here anymore. They were discorporated and sent back to the foot of the line to try again. Incidentally, that was the grokking that changed Jill's attitude from squeamishness to hearty approval, when she finally grokked in fullness that it is impossible to kill a man, that all we were doing was much like a referee removing a player for unnecessary roughness.
Aren't you afraid of playing God, lad?
Mike grinned with unashamed cheerfulness.
I am God. Thou art God. And any jerk I remove is God, too.
Jubal, it is said that God notes each sparrow that falls. And so he does. But the closest it can be said in English is that God cannot avoid noting the sparrow because the sparrow is God. And when a cat stalks a sparrow, both of them are God, carrying out God's thoughts. Another sky car started to land and vanished. Jubal did not comment.
How many did you toss out of the game last night?
Oh, about 450. I didn't count. This is a largish city. But for a while it is going to be an unusually decent one.
No cure, of course. There is no cure, short of the discipline.
Mike looked unhappy.
And that is what I must ask you about, Father.
I'm afraid I have misled our brothers.
How, Mike?
They're too optimistic. They see how well it works for us. They know how happy they are, how strong and healthy and aware, how deeply they love each other. And now they think they grok that it is just a matter of time until the whole human race will reach the same beatitude. Oh, not tomorrow. Some of them grok that 2,000 years is but a moment for such a mission. But eventually.
And I thought so, Jubal, at first. I led them to think so.
But Jubal, I had missed a key point. Humans are not Martians. I made this mistake again and again, corrected myself, and still made it. What works for Martians does not necessarily work for humans. Oh, the conceptual logic, which can be stated only in Martian, does work for both races. The logic is invariant. But the data are different, so the results are different. I couldn't see why. When people were hungry, some of them didn't volunteer to be butchered so that the rest could eat. On Mars, this is obvious, and an honor.
I couldn't understand why babies were so prized. On Mars, our two little girls in there would be dumped outdoors to live or die, and 9 out of 10 nymphs die their first season. My logic was right, but I misread the data. Here, babies do not compete, but adults do. On Mars, adults never compete. They've been weeded out as babies, but one way or another, competing and weeding takes place, or a race goes downhill. But whether or not I was wrong in trying to take the competition out at both ends, I have lately begun to grok that the human race won't let me, no matter what. Duke stuck his head into the room.
Mike, have you been watching outside? There's a crowd gathering around the hotel.
I know, agreed Mike. Tell the others that waiting is not filled. He went on to Jubal.
Thou art God. It's not a message of cheer and hope, Jubal. It's a defiance, and an unafraid, unabashed assumption of personal responsibility.
He looked sad,
but I rarely put it over. A very few, just these few here with us, our brothers, understood me and accepted the bitter along with the sweet, stood up and drank it, grokked it. The others, hundreds and thousands of others, either insisted on treating it as a prize without a contest, a conversion, or ignored it. No matter what I said, they insisted on thinking of God as something outside themselves, something that yearns to take every indolent moron to his breast and comfort him, the notion that the effort has to be their own, and that the trouble they are in is all their own doing, is one that they can't or won't entertain. The man from Mars shook his head. My failures so greatly outnumber my successes that I wonder if full grokking will show that I'm on the wrong track, that this race must be split up, hating each other, fighting, constantly unhappy, and at war even with their own individual selves, simply to have that weeding out that every race must have. Tell me, Father. You must tell me.
Mike, what in hell led you to believe that I was infallible?
Perhaps you are not. But every time I've needed to know something, you have always been able to tell me. And fullness always showed that you spoke rightly.
Damn it, I refuse this apotheosis. But I do see one thing, son. You have always urged everyone else never to hurry. Waiting will fill, you say.
That is right.
Now you are violating your own rule. You have waited only a little, a very short time by Martian standards, and you want to throw in the towel. You've proved that your system works for a small group, and I'm glad to confirm it. I've never seen such happy, healthy, cheerful people. That ought to be enough for the short time you've put in. Come back when you have 1,000 times this number, all working and happy and unjealous, and we'll talk it over again. Fair enough?
You speak rightly, Father.
I ain't through. You've been fretting that since you failed to hook 99 out of 100, the race couldn't get along without its present evils. Had to have them for weeding out, but damn it, lad, you've been doing the weeding. Or rather, the failures have been doing it by not listening to you. Had you planned to eliminate money and property?
Oh, no, inside the nest we don't need it, but
nor does any healthy family. But outside, you need it in dealing with other people. Sam tells me that our brothers, instead of getting unworldly, are slicker with money than ever, right?
Oh, yes. Money-making is a simple trick once you grok.
You've just added a new beatitude. Blessed is the rich in spirit, for he shall make dough. How do all people stack up in other fields? Better or worse than average?
Oh, better, of course. You see, Jubal, it's not a faith. The discipline is simply a method of efficient functioning in anything.
You've answered yourself, son. If all you say is true, and I'm not judging. I'm asking, you're answering. Then competition, far from being eliminated, is rougher than ever. If 0.1% of the population is capable of getting the news, then all you have to do is show them. And in a matter of some generations, the stupid ones will die out, and those with your discipline will inherit the earth. Whenever that is, in 1,000 years or 10,000, we'll be soon enough to worry about some new hurdle to make them jump higher.
But don't get faint-hearted because only a handful have turned into angels overnight. I never expected any to manage it. I thought you were making a damn fool of yourself by pretending to be a preacher.
Mike sighed and smiled. I was beginning to be afraid I was, worrying that I had let my brothers down.
I still wish you had called it cosmic halitosis or some such, but the name doesn't matter. If you've got the truth, you can demonstrate it. Talking doesn't prove it. Show people.
Mike did not answer. His eyelids drooped. He held perfectly still. His face was without expression. Jubal stirred restlessly, afraid that he had said too much, crowded the lad into a need to withdraw. Then Mike's eyes opened. He grinned merrily.
"You've got me all squared away, Father. I'm ready to show them now. I grok the fullness."
The man from Mars stood up.
"Waiting is ended."
Chapter 37 Jubal and the man from Mars strolled into the room with the big stereo tank. The entire nest was gathered, watching it. It showed a dense and turbulent crowd, somewhat restrained by policemen. Mike glanced at it and looked serenely happy.
"They come. Now is the fullness."
The sense of ecstatic expectancy Jubal had felt growing ever since his arrival swelled greatly. But no one moved.
"It's a mite big tip, sweetheart,"
Jill agreed.
"And ready to turn," added Patty.
"I'd better dress for it," Mike commented.
"Have I got any clothes around this dump, Patty?"
"Right away, Michael."
Jubal said,
"Son, that mob looks ugly to me. Are you sure this is the time to tackle them?"
"Oh, sure," said Mike.
"They've come to see me, so now I go down to meet them."
He paused while some clothing got out of the way of his face. He was being dressed at breakneck speed with the unnecessary help of several women. Each garment seemed to know where to go and how to drape itself.
"This job has obligations as well as privileges. The star has to show up for the show. Grok me. The mark's expected."
Duke said,
"Mike knows what he's doing, boss."
"Well, I don't trust mobs."
"That crowd is mostly curiosity seekers. They always are. Oh, there are some Fosterites and some others with grudges, but Mike can handle any crowd. You'll see. Right, Mike?"
"Correct, cannibal. Pull in a tip, then give him a show.
Where's my hat? Can't walk in the noonday sun without a hat."
An expensive Panama with a sporty colored band glided out and settled itself on his head. He cocked it jauntily.
"There. Do I look all right?"
He was dressed in his usual outer services mufti, a smartly tailored, sharply creased white business suit, shoes to match, snowy shirt, and a luxurious dazzling scarf.
Ben said,
"All you lack is a briefcase." "You grok I need one? Patty, do we have one?"
Jill stepped up to him. "Ben was kidding, dear. You look just perfect." She straightened his tie and kissed him, and Jubal felt kissed. "Go talk to them."
"Yep. Time to turn the tip. Ann, Duke."
"Ready, Mike."
Ann was wearing her fair witness cloak, wrapping her in dignity. Duke was just the opposite, being sloppily dressed with a lighted cigarette dangling from his face, an old hat on the back of his head with a card marked "Press" stuck in its band, and himself hung about with cameras and kit. They headed for the door to the foyer common to the four penthouse suites. Only Jubal followed. All the others, 30 and more, stayed around the stereo tank. Mike paused at the door. There was a hall table there with a pitcher of water and glasses, a dish of fruit and a fruit knife.
"Better not come any farther,"
he advised Jubal, "or Patty would have to escort you back through her pets." Mike poured himself a glass of water, drank part of it.
"Preaching is thirsty work."
He handed the glass to Anne, then took the fruit knife and sliced off a chunk of apple. It seemed to Jubal that Mike sliced off one of his fingers. But his attention was distracted as Duke passed the glass to him. Mike's hand was not bleeding, and Jubal had grown somewhat accustomed to legerdemain. He accepted the glass and took a sip, finding that his own throat was very dry. Mike gripped his arm and smiled.
"Quit fretting. This will take only a few minutes. See you later, Father."
They went out through the guardian cobras, and the door closed. Jubal went back to the room where the others were, still carrying the glass. Someone took it from him he did not notice as he was watching images in the big tank. The mob seemed denser, surging about, and held back by police armed only with nightsticks. There were a few shouts, but mostly just the unlocalized muttering of the crowd. Someone said,
"Where are they now, Patty?"
"They've dropped down the tube. Michael is a little ahead. Duke stopped to catch Ann. They're entering the lobby. Michael's been spotted. Pictures being taken."
The scene in the tank resolved into enormous head and shoulders of a brightly cheerful newscaster.
This is NWNW, New World Network's mobile news hound on the spot. While it's hot, your newscaster, happy holiday. We have just learned that the fake Messiah, sometimes known as the Man from Mars, has crawled out of his hideout in a hotel room here in beautiful St. Petersburg, the city that has everything to make you sing. Apparently Smith is about to surrender to the authorities. He crashed out of jail yesterday using high explosives smuggled into him by his fanatic followers, but the tight cordon placed around this city seems to have been too much for him. We don't know yet. I repeat, we don't know yet. So stay with the chap who covers the map. And now a word from your local sponsor who has given you this keyhole peep at the latest leap.
Thank you, happy holiday, and all you good people watching via NWNW.
What price paradise? Amazingly low. Come out and see for yourself at Elysian Fields. Just opened as home sites for a restricted clientele. Land reclaimed from the warm waters of the glorious Gulf, and every lot guaranteed at least 18 inches above mean high water, and only a small down payment on a happy... Uh-oh, later friends, phone Gulf 92828. And thank you, Jick Morris and the developers of Elysian Fields. I think we've got something, folks. Yes, sir, I think we do.
They're coming out the front entrance, Patty said quietly. The crowd hasn't spotted Michael yet.
Maybe not yet, but soon. You are now looking at the main entrance of the magnificent Sans Souci Hotel, gem of the Gulf, whose management is in no way responsible for this hunted fugitive, and who have cooperated with the authorities throughout, according to a statement just issued by Police Chief Davis. And while we're waiting to see what will happen, a few highlights in the strange career of this half-human monster raised on Mars.
The live scene was replaced by quick cuts of stock shots. The envoy blasting off years earlier, the champion floating upward silently and effortlessly under Lyle Drive, Martians on Mars, the triumphant return of the champion, a quick of the first faked interview with the man from Mars.
What do you think of the girls here on Earth?
Gee.
A quicker shot of the conference in the Executive Palace, and the much-publicized awarding of a doctorate in philosophy, all with rapid-fire commentary.
See anything, Patty? Michael is at the top of the steps. The crowd is at least 100 yards away, being kept off the hotel grounds. Duke has grabbed some pics, and Mike is waiting to let him change lenses. No hurry.
Happy Holiday went on as the tank shifted to the crowd, semi-close and panning.
You understand, friends, that this wonderful community is in a unique condition today. Something strange has been going on, and these people are in no mood to trifle. Their laws have been flouted. Their security forces treated with contempt. They are angry, righteously so. The fanatic followers of this alleged Antichrist have stopped at nothing to create turmoil in a futile effort to let their leader escape the closing net of justice. Anything can happen. Anything.
The announcer's voice climbed.
Yes, he's coming out now. He's walking toward the people.
The scene cut to reverse. Mike was walking directly toward camera. Anne and Duke were behind and dropping farther behind.
This is it. This is it. This is the blow-off.
Mike continued to walk unhurriedly toward the crowd until he loomed up in the stereo tank in life size, as if he were in the room with his water brothers. He stopped on the grass verge in front of the hotel, a few feet from the crowd.
You called me?
He was answered with a growl. The sky held scattered clouds. At that instant, the sun came out from behind one, and a shaft of light hit him. His clothes vanished. He stood before them, a golden youth, clothed only in beauty. Beauty that made Jubal's heart ache. Thinking that Michelangelo in his ancient years would have climbed down from his high scaffolding to record it for generations unborn. Mike said gently,
"Look at me. I am a son of man."
The scene cut for a 10-second plug, a line of can-can dancers singing, "Come on, ladies, do your duds in the smoothest, yummiest suds. Lover soap is kind to hands, but be sure you save the bands." The tank filled with foamy suds amid girlish laughter, and the scene cut back to newscast.
God damn you!
A half-brick caught Mike in the ribs. He turned his face toward his assailant.
But you yourself are God. You can damn only yourself, and you can never escape yourself.
Blasphemer!
A rock caught him over his left eye, and blood welled forth. Mike said calmly,
In fighting me, you fight yourself. For thou art God, and I am God, and all that groks is God. There is no other.
More rocks hit him. He began to bleed in several places.
Hear the truth. You need not hate, you need not fight, you need not fear. I offer you the water of life.
Suddenly his hand held a tumbler of water, sparkling in sunlight.
And you may share it whenever you so will, and walk in peace and love and happiness together.
A rock caught the glass and shattered it. Another struck him in the mouth. Through bruised and bleeding lips he smiled at them, looking straight into the camera with an expression of yearning tenderness on his face. Some trick of sunlight and stereo formed a golden halo back of his head.
Oh, my brothers, I love you so. Drink deep, share and grow closer without end. Thou art God.
Jubal whispered it back to him. The scene made a 5-second cut.
Cahuenga Cave, the nightclub with real Los Angeles smog imported fresh every day. 6 erotic dancers. Lynch him, give the bastard a nigger necktie.
A heavy gauge shotgun blasted at close range, and Mike's right arm was struck off at the elbow and fell. It floated gently down, then came to rest on the cool grasses, its hand curved open in invitation.
Give him the other barrel, Shorty, and aim closer.
The crowd laughed and applauded. A brick smashed Mike's nose, and more rocks gave him a crown of blood.
The truth is simple, but the way of man is hard. First you must learn to control yourself. The rest follows. Blessed is he who knows himself and commands himself, for the world is his, and love and happiness and peace walk with him wherever he goes.
Another shotgun blast was followed by 2 more shots. One short, a .45 slug, hit Mike over the heart, shattering the 6th rib near the sternum and making a large wound. The buckshot and the other slug sheared through his left tibia 5 inches below the patella and left the fibula sticking out at an angle, broken and white against the yellow and red of the wound. Mike staggered slightly and laughed, went on talking, his words clear and unhurried.
Thou art God. Know that, and the way is opened.
God damn it, let's stop this taking of the name of the Lord in vain. Come on, men, let's finish him.
The mob surged forward, led by one bold with a club. They were on him with rocks and fists, and then with feet as he went down. He went on talking while they kicked his ribs in and smashed his golden body, broke his bones, and tore an ear loose. At last someone called out,
"Back away so we can get the gasoline on him!"
The mob opened up a little at that warning, and the camera zoomed to pick up his face and shoulders. The man from Mars smiled at his brothers, said once more, softly and clearly,
"I love you."
An incautious grasshopper came whirring to a landing on the grass a few inches from his face. Mike turned his head, looked at it as it stared back at him.
"Thou art God,"
he said happily, and discorporated. Chapter 38. Flame and billowing smoke came up and filled the tank.
"Golly," Patty said reverently. "That's the best blow-off ever used."
"Yes," agreed Becky judicially. "The professor himself never dreamed up a better one." Van Tromp said very quietly, apparently to himself,
"In style. Smart and with style. The lad finished in style."
Jubal looked around at his brothers. Was he the only one who felt anything? Jill and Dawn were seated, each with an arm around the other, but they did that whenever they were together. Neither seemed disturbed. Even Dorcas was dry-eyed and calm. The inferno in the tank cut to smiling Happy Holiday, who said,
"And now, folks, a few moments for our friends at Elysian Fields, who so graciously gave up their..."
Patty cut him off.
"Anne and Duke are on their way back up," she said. "I'll let them to the foyer, and then we'll have lunch."
She started to leave. Jubal stopped her.
"Patty, did you know what Mike was going to do?"
She seemed puzzled.
"Huh? Why, of course not, Jubal. It was necessary to wait for fullness. None of us knew."
She turned and left.
"Jubal."
Jill was looking at him.
"Jubal, our beloved father, please stop and grok the fullness. Mike is not dead. How can he be dead when no one can be killed?
nor can he ever be away from us who have already grokked him. Thou art God.
Thou art God,
he repeated dully. That's better. Come and sit with Dawn and me. In the middle.
No. No, just let